Welcome to How Do I, the podcast where the questions were never asked and the advice is unreliable. I'm Jacob Rogers.
I'm Matthew Dalton. Oh, and welcome to the show. Mm-hmm. All right, straight to the questions.
All right, let's do it.
Andrew sent this in to us.
Okay.
I am working on a project called the Makermobile with some fellow members of the Vancouver Hackerspace. Basically, we were inspired by groups like SparkTruck and the Mobile Fab Lab to create a portable makerspace.
Ooh.
So we're renovating an old truck and turning it into a classroom.
Oh, that's awesome. That's like the Planet Mechanics mobile.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We're really bootstrapping the project up right now, so we aren't going to have that many shiny toys as other maker trucks. We've built little desks into the truck, and we'll mount some computers on the walls, but that's about all we're working with right now.
Okay.
I think that's fairly fancy.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of some really good low-cost activities that we could do with kids. Got any ideas? Could be anything from arts and crafts to robotics. We'll probably be doing after-school programs and summer camps, so it would be good if the activities could be done in less than an hour.
Oh, that's great.
So, low-cost after-school activities mm-hmm. for, I'm going to guess, like, probably junior high, elementary, maybe some high school kids.
Right.
Low-cost ideas, because, I mean, after you buy the truck, retrofit it with computers and desks and everything, you don't have much left.
Yeah, you've already spent a bunch of money. Okay, so I can think of two ways to have this set up. Either you can have the workspace be in the truck, or you can have stuff in the truck that you pull out and set up, like in a work area, which would allow you to work with more kids and have a larger space to work on stuff, and then the truck would just be storage for tools or whatever.
Right, that's true. Now, I looked on their site to look at their truck,
mm-hmm.
and they have 3D models of the desk setup. And the way it's set up is, in the back of the truck, it's kind of like a refrigerator truck kind of thing, like
right.
a Mack truck.
Like
but
a,
not
a box
quite
truck.
As, yeah, not as long.
Like a U-Haul.
Yeah, like a U-Haul.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly like a U-Haul.
Yeah.
And they have 6 desks that fold down from the walls.
Oh, nice space.
So they'll be able to have students on either side, so 2 rows of 3 desks
mm-hmm.
Along either side of the truck.
Two rows of 3 desks each?
Two rows of 3 desks in the back of the truck. So
in the back of the
there's
truck.
One row on each side of the
right.
truck.
And so that only leaves about maybe a table's width for walking space, a quarter between the tables that you can walk down.
Exactly. And along the walls, they're going to put toolboxes with tools and everything hanging
Excellent.
In it. Over the, I guess, the front of the cab where you have that overhang of the
right,
U-Haul
that little
that
shelf.
Goes over the cab of the truck.
Mm-hmm.
They're planning on putting a large TV up there, a display TV,
oh.
and maybe some other toolboxes.
Yeah, this sounds awesome.
So, yeah. So, I assume most of the activities they're going to do probably going to be based in the truck.
Mm-hmm.
But they might have some stuff they could bring out. I do not know.
Yeah. I wonder how many kids they'd be able to get in there at one time since it's going to be kind of cramped. I know I've seen projects like this before. People have built mobile wood shops and workstations like that. And usually you can only have one person in the truck at a time since it's there's not a lot of room to move around.
Possibly. But, I mean, they have 6 tables, 2 kids.
That's
per,
true.
If they get 2 kids per side of the table, then, I mean, they
mm-hmm.
got 24 kids.
Yeah, if it's a small program, you should be able to. Oh, well, you can't fit 24 kids in a U-Haul truck.
If they're little enough, but that's not the important thing. The important
You're
thing is
You're not just storing them. They have to have like a
workspace. If they're working in teams, that's not important.
Okay.
What's important is the projects that the kids are going to work on, and the projects need to be cheap. We're
right.
not building their truck. They're doing that.
Okay.
We're
working on
the
projects.
Project.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I guess electronics project would be good since that really just requires a table to work on, and then you have, a soldering gun and your workspace.
Yeah, if you find a place with like cheap sets of tools and get a set of tools for like 1 or 2 sets of tools for all the desks, so you
mm-hmm.
have like a crap soldering iron with a crap place to put, because kids are going to be soldering iron.
Yeah, they're going to
like
break stuff.
Wood. They're going
right.
to be doing wood burning with the soldering iron by accident mm-hmm. on the mm-hmm. tables.
Or purpose, depending on the kid.
Or on purpose.
Right.
So you don't want to have $50 soldering irons. But
yeah, exactly.
I mean, you buy or build a stand that they'll hold them up safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then glue guns, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
That way they have, tools for each table. And you buy low-cost ones so you can replace them easy when the kids break them.
Mm-hmm. Legos is also another good thing if you're teaching them just basic principles of engineering and things like that. Kinects, erector sets, I mean, these are all things that are geared towards kids and have a lot of concepts that are, you know, related to engineering and construction and things like this.
Right. So, like, you mentioned electronics earlier.
Yeah.
Electronics, I think of as more of a higher dollar item.
Mm-hmm.
How would you cut the... So if you were going to teach, say, 20 kids on electronic projects,
mm-hmm.
assume that the kids are probably going to leave with the materials.
Right.
How do you keep costs to a minimum?
You can just have a simple blinking light, you know, with a timer and a button battery and an LED. That's a nice small project, low cost.
Okay.
The components are simple, and I mean, you basically just be teaching them soldering and the basics of an electronic circuit. So that's a nice intro level project for kids.
Okay, cool. One of the things I thought of was, I don't know if you know Solarbotics.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, they're a good company. They have lots of electronic kits, so
mm-hmm.
you can get an idea of some cool kits that they have. And some of the stuff they have, I mean, they have little race car kits where you could build a car out of circuit boards, and I think the kit costs like $20-$25.
Yeah, we I think we actually talked about this last episode about somebody wanted to build something that was like the solar racer, I think it was called, and we discussed the car that built up a charge from the solar panel and then shoots off once it's fully loaded.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, like, I don't think, like, Solarbotics got me thinking of another kit, and I don't think it's theirs, but I don't remember offhand, but it's called Blinky Bugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's basic, and the person who makes Blinky Bugs also makes something called LED art. And
okay.
Blinky Bugs are just, what are they, like, pipe cleaners?
Yeah.
LEDs, battery, and a tape.
Yeah.
Or glue, depending on the kit you get. And then LED art is LEDs, batteries, and a little sheet of paper that diffuses the LEDs,
mm-hmm.
and the LEDs just flash back and forth and make kind of a, and hot glue to diffuse the LEDs.
And that's a good idea too, because with the Blinky Bugs, it's basically just getting an LED to light up and blink, and then the kids also get to design what their bug would look like, and kids really like to customize things to their own design, and if they had the opportunity to, you know, build the bug around the LED to make it their own design, then that would be way more engaging than just simply getting a light to blink.
Yeah, yeah. And I will be honest, I spent too much time researching this. I started having a lot of fun, which isn't a problem really.
Right.
But I was going through page after page, and I won't remember most of it talking to you right now.
Uh-huh.
I will put all of it online, but I know that some of the stuff I thought of was Instructables has really cool. They have an education section,
mm-hmm.
which is devoted to Instructables that have teaching principles in them.
Right.
So, like, I wasn't sure if they were gearing this toward teaching with the idea of having educational principles, or if they were just with the idea of having fun and learning electronics and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
But I thought that the Instructables, and they have contests like Make to Learn contest, hands-on learning, education, teachers, science fair kind of contests,
mm-hmm.
that all have really cool projects devoted to teaching kids. Some of the contest winners are really good things that are fairly cheap to do.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen model rockets that are like built from scratch, and those little stomp rockets, bottle rockets like that. There's a lot of electronics projects. There's lots of stuff. It's all for teachers. A lot of it's by teachers as well.
Actually, you mentioned the stomp rockets.
Yeah.
Make magazine has done both like air powered rockets and water powered rockets.
Yeah.
And both of them have a base station, but that's not, like, you don't want kids building base stations for all their rockets. Like, you have the built base station there ready in the side of the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the air rockets, it's just paper and tape and maybe a little bit of cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottle rockets, it's just the bottle and you're decorating it with paper and tape.
Right.
So kids get to make and decorate their own rockets, and then they get to launch them, which is the coolest thing in the world.
Definitely. Some of my favorite memories from my childhood were at science camps where we did just that. You know, built stomp rockets and got to design them, and you know, drew little messages like "to Mars" or whatever, and then watch them go 50 feet up in the air and come back down.
Nice. Didn't quite make it.
Didn't quite make it, but the thought was there. Yeah, it was fun to design them anyway.
Yeah, there's other things like this. I don't think this really has any learning principle, but like again, in Make they have the marshmallow shooters.
Oh yeah.
Which every time I've done a group event and had kids involved, I've done marshmallow shooters, and everybody loves them.
Oh, yeah.
They will run around for hours shooting each other with marshmallows. Mm-hmm. I will run around for hours shooting other people with marshmallows. It's just, right. It's fun.
And the marshmallow shooter is literally just, like, five pieces of PVC plus some fittings, and then you can just load marshmallows in there, and then you just blow into the end of the tube, and it shoots them out. And it's fun for kids and adults. Like, everybody has fun with those things.
No, it's super fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was also thinking, so make instructables. I started thinking of different places you can go, and there's lots of educational resources that are devoted to, like, after-school activities you can look at.
Right.
But another place is HowToons. Like, every single one of their comics is a easy-to-build, just low-cost device.
Right.
Which I thought was really cool.
And, you know, there's also lots of books out there that are, you know, simple science projects for kids. You know, like 101 easy science projects to do on a rainy day or whatever. And those are excellent resources for demonstrating simple concepts to kids like that. I just thought of another one. You can do the balloon rocket, where you take a balloon and you tape a straw to it, and then you thread a string through the straw, and you tie the string both ends at two stationary points, and then when you blow the balloon up and let it go, it shoots along the string, and it's a nice demonstration of propulsion.
No, it's nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Also, with the electronics, getting things somewhat cheap, if you use things like Makey Makeys...
Mm-hmm.
It allows kids to make switches and buttons out of all the things around them.
Right.
Which you don't necessarily have to let them take home. Like, that's something, like, if you make a switch out of your backpack and your friend, you're not, like, then it's when everything's said and done, then you're like, all right, well, now you know how to do it, now you can leave, and that's more obvious that you don't get to take the item home.
Right.
Whereas if you make a paper rocket, then you get, like, a souvenir at the end, which, I mean, they're two totally different activities.
Right, right. And if you do multiple projects, as long as the kids have something to take home, they won't feel as bad about leaving other things behind. If they can take, you know, their water bottle rocket home, then it'll be less devastating when they can't take their, you know, the more expensive parts home.
No, of course. And then getting away a little bit from, like, engineering, because I don't think... Like, I mean, I don't know whether or not they want it to be devoted to electronics and engineering, or if they want to kind of branch out from that.
Did they say just science concepts, or did they elaborate?
No, they mentioned that it's a maker mobile, so maker stuff. It's Vancouver Hackspace,
right?
And they mentioned a couple other, like the Mobile Fab Lab and Spark Truck, that have done this before.
Oh, I thought of another good one. Circuit bending is another fun stuff for kids. If you can get any cheap toy that has a sound element to it, like a talking stuffed animal or something like that, you can open it up and have them just take a small piece of wire and move it around on the circuit as the sound is running and try to get it to make different sounds or short it out. It's just experimentation with a circuit.
Great. And beyond circuit bending, if you wanted to go a more low-tech route, just building instruments from scratch.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Is really cool. And I don't know if you want to use cigar boxes, but you can make something similar to a cigar box guitar with other sorts of boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you can make thumb pianos, which are really cheap, really easy. Mm-hmm. It's just metal screwed down to a box.
Yeah. You can make a PVC pipe didgeridoo, which I've made, and which are a lot of fun to play.
Those are
great.
And
it's just a drone. There's a noise, but kids love it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, instruments are great. I was also thinking of silk screening.
Oh, yeah.
So with a silk screen, you put the first layer of, like, wet paint on, and you take it out in the sun. You put it in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And you hold a drawing, like a black drawing, over the part that you don't want to dry. You hold it in the sun for like 2 minutes, and then you take it back inside, and the middle part that's under the black of the page that was drawn on is still wet, and everything else is dried from under the sun, and
now
then you just take water and you rinse it out.
Now, it seems like you're making the screen, but without using a photoemulsion, because I know that the way that these silk screens usually work is that you put on a layer of emulsion on the screen.
No, that's exactly what it is. It's photo emulsion.
Oh, okay.
I could not remember the name of it, but you get it in the daylight, and it works the same as doing it behind the scenes in a dark room.
Yeah, that's great.
And then you can go and put silkscreen on their backpacks, on their shirts. I'm sure their parents would be super happy.
Yeah, right. But you can buy cheap white t-shirts and have them just do that, and then they get to take their
shirt
off.
And then they have their own design that they can print on things.
Right.
And then when you're done for the day, you could take it back to, like, the Hackspace or wherever you take the truck to at night and just clean them all out for next time.
Yeah, that's great. You can also... I just had another idea.
So many ideas.
I know. What was my idea, though? I can't remember now.
Oh, no.
I know. I was so excited by your photo emulsion thing. paper mache and chicken wire.
I want to guess at what you would do with these, but I can't think of anything.
You can build. You can use the chicken wire to. It's more of a craft thing than a demonstration of any scientific principle. But you just use the chicken wire or the any sort of a mesh screen to form your shape, and then you use the paper mache to skin it with newspaper, and then you can paint it, and you can make.
Kind of like sculpting.
Really. Yeah, exactly. It's a form of sculpting, yeah.
Very nice. I was thinking of brush bots are tiny, but even beyond that, if you go to...
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of... Like, you actually bots. Made me think of... Yeah, bristle bots. And mm-hmm. There's tons of types of those.
Yeah.
But you made me think of wearable stuff. For whatever reason, chicken wire, I was like, wearable!
Oh, yeah. Well, we were talking about shirts before, yeah.
I mean, if you get some a big spool of thread, like conductive thread...
Oh, yeah.
And everything that they need to... I mean, they can sew stuff into whatever they have, and... Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an easy way to... And thread isn't... super expensive.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of it.
Right,
so,
you can buy it in bulk.
Yeah, exactly.
I was also thinking paper mache, you can make masks, which kids love as well. You just take a balloon and then use paper mache to cover one side of the balloon with the paper mache. And then once it dries, you pop the balloon and it just leaves that... concave surface behind, and you can paint that like a mask. Just cut some eye holes out, and you have a nice mask there.
Oh, nice. I was thinking if you had like a turntable, you can like pre-build walls on it and slits in it, and you can have the kids work in groups to make like zoetrope designs,
yeah.
So they could put little flipbook kind of things and put them in there and watch them like a little...
Yeah.
A little movie.
And you know what? That's nice. If you have them make a flipbook first, then they can take the pages of it and put it in the zoetrope. Although, usually flipbooks are more pages than a zoetrope has frames. So it'd have to be a pretty small flipbook.
With 12 pages.
There you go, yeah.
Solved.
Mm-hmm.
You think of anything else?
No, I think that we had some pretty good ideas for this one. Let's move on.
Gliders. If you want to teach like aerodynamics and all kinds of like anything related to air and wind resistance mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff, airplanes and gliders are beautiful for that.
Yeah, and plus if you teach the kids to make new designs for airplanes, that's something that they'll remember forever. I remember the first time I was ever taught to make a paper airplane, and it was one of the best moments of my childhood.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. One last one.
Uh-huh.
Before we move on. Instead of doing a brush bot, if you have the little vibrating motors from like phones or whatever else you have them
right.
from, you could make little like fun little drawing pens with the vibration motor on it too.
Oh,
so it's
yeah.
like those
scribble
fun little pens.
Those little,
yeah, the scribble pens. Mm-hmm. Like just as easy as a actually probably easier than a bristle. It's like the same difficulty.
It's the same thing.
Level.
You're basically just attaching a vibrating motor to
you're
something.
Taping it to something different.
Right.
But yeah, it's a unique way to do the same thing in a different way.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So yeah, that seems like there was. A lot of stuff there.
Yeah, we do have a lot of stuff there. Probably too much stuff there, so let's move on.
Probably too much stuff. All right, so I'm trying to achieve something which I would imagine isn't all that difficult. Basically, I would like something like a Raspberry Pi to connect to a set of LED strips. Then, a Bluetooth or Wi-Fi I could send a command to turn them off or on from my phone. That's it. I'd also like...
Oh, is that all?
Wait. I'd also like the same unit to power the little OLED or LCD screen that displays the time, if possible. That's
it. Well, these things are never as easy as you think they're going to be.
So he wants a Raspberry Pi to power a set of LED strips.
Right.
And to be able to turn that on or off with his Bluetooth Wi-Fi. And he wants the same power unit to power both of them.
And he also wants it to be able to control an OLED screen, which is like the kind of screen you'd find on a printer or something. It's basically just it's an LED screen, but it's got displays.
He says he wants it to display a LED OLED or LCD screen that displays the time if possible.
Okay.
So, let's not worry about that yet.
Yeah.
let's start with Raspberry Pi LED strip via Bluetooth or Wi-Fi.
Okay. Well, first off, I would say that the Arduino is probably going to be an easier system to get set up, since you can get a Bluetooth or Wi-Fi shield and then instantly have access to those networks. Whereas the Raspberry Pi, you have to get some sort of an adapter in order to do that, and you don't have any shield that's made just for it.
So you have your Raspberry Pi. The first thing you're going to want to get is an Arduino to plug into it.
Right.
That's... Yeah, I don't know if a Raspberry Pi... It's similar to powering an LED strip with your desktop computer. If, okay. I mean, it's a set... Like, your Raspberry Pi is a computer. It has right. the same inputs and outputs as a computer.
I don't think that he wants to power it with a Raspberry. He doesn't want to run the power from... Well, maybe he does, but it sounds like he just wants to use it to turn the LEDs on and off. It can have a separate power source.
Right, no, and that's fine. So here's the thing. If you're using your desktop computer mm-hmm. to turn on and off a strip of LEDs, an LED strip,
right.
how are you going to... Like, just like not even thinking about Raspberry Pi, how are you going to do it with your desktop computer?
That's a good question. You're going to have some sort of a program on your computer that is capable of interfacing with either a transistor or a relay in order to turn these things on and off. And the thing that is most common is an Arduino. I mean, that...
I was going to say, I don't like where this is going. Arduino.
Yeah, really. The Arduino is there for simple things like this. The Raspberry Pi is for when you need a computer... You know, something that maybe requires a mouse and a keyboard input, or does some simple sound processing. It's for projects where the Arduino just doesn't have that capability. But the Arduino
right.
is there.
Or if you need more logic, like if you want to have processing running mm-hmm. and looking at events currently happening, and having that output to the Arduino to control a robot, and
right.
you want to have more logic than the Arduino can hold.
Mm-hmm.
Then a Raspberry Pi is super useful.
Yeah, definitely.
But just to have the Raspberry Pi itself powering an LED strip, I don't think is going to work too well.
Yeah. I mean, you can still... the Raspberry Pi... Yeah, because, I mean, does the Raspberry Pi have pinouts for... Can you put... I know you can put Python on it, and you can write scripts. I'm assuming you can write scripts to turn pins on and off the same way that...
You could do anything on your Raspberry Pi that you can do on your desktop computer. It's just going to take a little longer because the processor's
right.
a little slower.
My computer doesn't have pinouts, though. It doesn't have a...
If you open it, you might find some.
I guess it's true. No.
I mean, it's a motherboard. It's...
Mm-hmm.
Your motherboard and your computer has pinouts on it. It's just...
Yeah, that's true.
There's no reason to... I wonder if one of the pinouts is for... Like, on your computer, you have a pinout for the power light on
yeah,
the front of your
yeah,
computer.
Yeah, that's totally true.
I wonder if there's a... But then it only turns on when the Raspberry Pi... So, basically, you would send a Pi, a wireless signal, to some sort of power adapter in your house that turns on the Raspberry Pi,
uh-huh.
and then when the Raspberry Pi is on, the power light would come on.
Right.
And that would control the LED strips.
Which is more convoluted than it needs to be.
Yes, I think the easiest... So one of the other things... So he goes on to say that to power an OLED or an LCD screen that displays the time if possible, I think what this means is that he wants to have a timestamp for every time the Raspberry Pi turns the LED strip on and off.
Oh, I see.
Like, I think that makes sense to me.
Right.
I don't know if that's exactly what it means.
Mm-hmm. You're assuming then it would log the time in some sort of an internal memory thing that he can check later. It would have some sort of a log that he can export and then look at when every time this thing was turned on. Is that what you were thinking?
I think so. Or yeah. I think it'll just have like an Excel sheet displayed.
Right.
And every time it's turned on or off, just like a new timestamp will be put into the next
okay.
row.
Yeah, that's a good way to keep track of it, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to do that, and you wanted to so if you want to have an LCD screen connected to this, constantly displaying what's going on,
mm-hmm.
a Raspberry... So you have the Arduino controlling. I mean, the kit you need for this is an Arduino. You
yeah.
have an Arduino controlling the LED strips. There's tons of instructions out there on how to do this.
Yeah.
On how to turn on an LED with
right.
an Arduino.
We've talked about it before, how to turn it on.
Yeah. Expand that to an LED strip.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
A little more power.
Right. And then you could probably use an XB if you wanted to have it communicate with a computer, or possibly a Raspberry Pi if you're...
Yeah, I mean, what I was thinking you could do is you can just basically seat it right next to the Raspberry Pi,
mm-hmm.
have the Raspberry Pi powering the Arduino, have
right.
the Arduino sending the information right back to the Raspberry mm-hmm. Pi.
Just via USB.
Just via USB, and having the Raspberry Pi populating your spreadsheet, and then you have a display port on your Raspberry Pi, so it's just a matter of getting an OLED or an LCD screen that has a HDMI cable on it that can power with 5 volts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's super easy. Yeah. Like he said, he imagines it's not that difficult, and it's not.
It's not. Yeah. You just have to find the right parts. You don't want to have to try to, you know, force the Raspberry Pi into doing something that it is not really made to do. You want to use the right parts, and the Arduino is the right part for this project.
Yeah, exactly. It is. Mm-hmm. All right. So moving on.
Yeah.
Mechanism for mechanical timer.
Ooh, I like it.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
My wife and I both feed the dog, but we're never sure whether the other's already done it or not. The food disappears pretty quickly. I'd like to build a track with a slider that takes about 10 hours to slide from fed at the top to not fed at the bottom, and make it so that the slider is easy to slide back to the top. What immediately comes to mind is a counterweight escapement mechanism, but I thought I'd hit up the brain trust to make sure there wasn't a simpler way to pull this off. I could also envision a timer chip hooked up to a mechanical release, but I'd prefer to stay wholly mechanical for this one.
Right. So it sounds like what he wants is a timer for a dog feeder. He doesn't want the dog feeder to be automatic. He wants to be the one to feed the dog, but he wants a timer and a way to indicate whether or not the dog has been fed so that it doesn't get doubly fed or not fed.
Exactly. And reading this question, the first thing I thought of was your cuckoo clock.
Oh,
because you have to pull the string on that thing to reset it, don't you? Like you pull the string one way to start it?
You pull the string. Well, the way that the cuckoo clock works is it's got two chains dangling down from it, and those chains have weights on them. And those weights are providing the potential energy to drive the spring inside of it, which is winding the clock up. And so when you pull the chains, you're basically just rewinding it. It's not really resetting the cuckooing on it, but it is...
Well, right, but you pull one, and then the other one falls over time to power the clock, and then at the next day, you have to pull the one again to reset it to let it keep going. Like
right.
A wind-up watch, but with the pull.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have that for the... if you have that same mechanism, but every 10 hours, the chain... You have to pull the chain?
Yeah.
Would that not be similar?
I see what you're saying. It's just a wind up thing that takes 10 hours to wind down and then is reset by pulling the chain.
Yeah.
Yeah. That totally makes sense. If you look at a cuckoo clock, then if you were to take one apart, then you would be able to see how that chain mechanism imparts its energy into the spring. Because you need to have some way of slowly releasing energy, and usually it's either through a pendulum or something that rocks back and forth and ticks over a gear, like with an escapement, like you said, with a ratcheting mechanism on it to tick by. Designing that yourself would be kind of difficult. You'd need to, well, at least it seems difficult to me. You'd need to figure out the time, and you'd have to experiment with your thing to get it precise to just 10 hours. It seems like the easiest way to do it is just to buy a digital timer and set it for 10 hours, and then you don't reset it until you feed the dog.
Yeah, he could do that, but he wants to do it mechanically. So let's say you have a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And you put that wheel between two plates. And the more you tighten the plates to the wheel, the harder the wheel is to turn.
Yeah, like disc brakes on a car.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So then you put a weight, sort of, except on the rubber part.
Yeah, except that's not how disc brakes work.
It's close.
Yeah.
So you put you attach a weight to the wheel,
mm-hmm.
and then you attach a crank to the side of the wheel, and you crank it up, and you just play with the tightness of the metal plates on the wheel.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
To see how, and you basically test it. You see how long it takes to pull that weight all the way down.
Right. I would say that you're going to run into some problems with accuracy with that. I would think that you wouldn't be able to get a consistent speed from that. You know, as the friction builds up, and you know, it's going to wear away at either the wheel or the discs, and then it's going to slowly get faster and faster as time goes on.
Okay.
So that may be.
All right. Well, bear with me. You make a giant Lego machine.
Uh huh.
And and it takes 10 hours to go all the way down the wall. From the like a ball machine, and you start the ball.
A giant marble run,
Yes, and the marble just goes all the way back and forth all along your house walls,
and it just freaks your cat out for 10 hours until it hits the bottom. I like that. I like that. I was also thinking if you have, it's hard because if you can have any sort of an electronic motor in there, if you can have some way of providing power that's not purely mechanical, then this gets a lot easier because then you just have to design a timing mechanism. But if you're trying to make the power for it also mechanical, that's where you're running into... So, okay. let's think about simple mechanical timers. You've got a spring, which winds down, a la an egg timer.
Right.
You've got an hourglass, which is a purely mechanical timing mechanism.
I was trying to think if there's something you could put in the... Like, if you could, like, put a hole in a... Like an hourglass, so that it, like maybe a little sensor that would output as soon as there's no more sand hitting it, and it would either rotate the hourglass a number of times until it reaches, like, it basically counts, like, all right, one, two, three, and it keeps turning it, and then once it gets to the end, it puts up a flag.
Right.
But I don't know that there's a way to do that, because you have to drill into the glass and...
Okay, so if you made your own hourglass, like you didn't buy one that was self-contained, and instead you just had a funnel at the top that and a collection jar at the bottom, so that sand slowly filled up the jar, and it wasn't, you know, contained in a nice glass case, but
oh,
you just
no,
had
that's
a filling.
Perfect.
Yeah, and then it just gets slowly heavier and heavier until it, you know, if you have that jar sitting on a lever. Then, as soon as it gets heavy enough to move the lever, it, you know, drops, it raises the other side, and if the other side's got a flag on it, then,
So here's what you do. You get 2 5-hour hourglasses, and you break them both in half.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, you break them both in slightly over half, and you put all of the sand into one bin, and you put the sand through one hourglass, and you have the other part of the hourglass sitting underneath it with the funnel just above it to take in, and then you weight it so it already knows the weight of the 1 hourglass with the funnel, and then when it gets all the sand in, 10 hours.
Yeah,
done.
And that way you already have something that's been designed to release sand at the proper rate. So
yeah,
that,
and when it's done, you basically swap the hourglasses to the appropriate, like you swap 1 hourglass to the other place.
Right.
Or you just take it out and you pour it into the top funnel, and then you replace the hourglass underneath. So it's a nice, quick replacement.
Yeah, that's a good way of hacking the hourglass and using that part. Now, one thing that I can think of that would go wrong with this is that you're going to gradually lose grains of sand. If you don't have this in a closed system, like an hourglass, like a normal hourglass, one by one, you know, those little grains of sand are going to disappear, either getting stuck to something or, you know, they miss the mark.
Right.
And that won't affect your time, because it's all depending on the weight, and it'll still take the same amount of time to fill up the jar.
Yeah, you just go to your garden and you grab a little bit
more.
Well,
you have to get the same amount. You have to get the same sand. Yeah, but if you were to be able to find that in bulk, then you could just replace the hopper of sand every so often.
Nice.
Yeah. So I like that. That's a good way to do it. Yeah. I'm trying to think of any other ones. Yeah. Let's see. I like filling something slowly up with weight to lift a lever. That's a nice way of that's a nice simple mechanism for making this sort of a timer. This thing would be rather large. I mean, it's not a nice self-contained system. Although if you were to engineer it yourself and take some time, you could probably get the footprint of it down pretty low. Let's see what else. You could do it reverse. You could have air slowly bubbling through water until it's buoyant enough to lift something up.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
like just how it, so you have, so say you have a balloon on a tap and you can, so you have it hooked to an air compressor that's only releasing air at the slowest possible amount.
Right.
Or say
tiny
you have
bubbles.
A water stone.
If you get, yeah, exactly. An aerostone.
Yeah. So you have like a fish tank, an aerostone, and at the top of the fish that you get one of those, like almost closed at the top.
Oh,
you just put the.
You know those, in fish tanks, they have those treasure chests that slowly fill up with bubbles, and when enough bubbles have filled it up, it opens up and releases all of them. That's basically a simple timer there too. It's really not as accurate as a hourglass or anything. It's, you know, it doesn't happen with exact regularity, but if you were able to control how much air is going in at a time, and then also make sure that it releases all of the air completely once it's finished, then that's another timing mechanism that you can use there.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah,
although, like, that needs to be underwater, so you have to pull... Like, you either need a really big fish tank and a really big treasure chest that can hold a lot of air.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Or, like, what if you put an air bladder into something outside of the, like, a fish tank?
Yeah.
So you had, like a whoopee cushion-style thing inside, and you just filled it with air over time, and it just blew out whatever it was sitting in.
Yeah, that would work, too. See, at that point, you've got a fish tank sitting next to your dog bowl. That's like the world's most complicated pet food timer.
Well, then your dog has something to watch while he's eating.
Right.
Which is kind of a nice thing to do for your dog.
The dog's going, this is really clever. The principles of physics and timing is really, really clever.
Like, I'm glad they finally got me a TV to watch while
I'm a
I eat.
Dog.
Because
right.
they watch that thing all day long.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, yeah, I think that seems nice.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you have on that one?
No. I thought about maybe talking a little bit about making an automatic dog food thing that would release the dog food as well as provide a timer. But
no, you want the dog to know that you're the master.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not feeding the dog, then it doesn't know that you're the one feeding it, and therefore it has no reason to love you.
Exactly. Because you're not loving it.
Right.
That's... Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
The dog will look at you like, what do I need you for? I get my food from this automatic dog bowl. What do you do?
Get away from me, man.
I have no reason to respect you.
All right. So, yeah, that seems good, because he wanted mechanical
specifically. Yeah.
All right. One more question.
Okay.
DIY swivel mount.
Ooh.
We don't have swivel mounts here. Wherever here is.
Okay.
I need one.
Do they have the internet where you are?
I hope so. They do, because he posts, or at the local library.
Okay.
I need one to hold my notebook plus monitor while I'm in bed. Is there any instructable on this?
Hmm.
Can you make one? If not, I need one that goes up and down, left and right. Right now, my monitor is useless as I'm in bed most of the time and I can't use it while I'm in bed. Thank you.
Okay.
So I'm just going to assume in my head that he sleeps in like a loft bed. And he has a desk kind of underneath, and he wants to be able to take his monitor like up and down from desk.
Right.
I don't think
which
this
is more
is what
than
he
a
has.
Swivel mount. Yeah.
This right. Is... I don't think this is what he has, but I think this. He wants to go up and down and left and right.
Or I mean, he could even be in bed, and if his monitor's just on his desk, then it's.
Yeah, if his bed's next to his desk, then all he has to do is go left and right.
Oh yeah. I see what you're saying. Oh. Okay. I was thinking more like a. One of those jointed arms with springs on them, like you would find, like they have those like desk lamps that you can move them up and down and position
Right
wherever you wanted. But I guess he really is just talking about a swivel mount, where he just wants to be able to rotate it left, right, up and down. Okay,
yeah, exactly.
So a ball joint then is going to be what he wants, because that will give you omnidirectional rotation there, or at least up to a point.
Right, and you'd have to get one that's... I think you'd have to get one that's self-tightening. Like, I think you'd have to actually get out, move it, and then tighten. Like, you'd have to loosen it. Move it to where you want it and tighten it, so you wouldn't be able to like swing it around to you in bed and kind of enjoy like wherever and the kind of position it while you were in bed where
okay,
you like
so you
it.
Are
and
thinking
then just
about
enjoy.
Something with an arm then, like a metal arm that's attached to the wall.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was originally thinking too, which I think is a cooler project.
Or actually, what if you had? So what if you had a slide? So let's say you have a loft bed, and let's say on the wall. You have a vertical slide.
Okay.
With bolts on the top and bottom to keep anything from going above or below.
Right.
So you had your monitor on a mount that moved left and right, like the wall mounts that move left and right, like a little mount. So then you can move on the slide. You can move your monitor up and down wherever you want it, and then you can use the swivel to move it left and right wherever you want it.
Yeah. I like that a lot. You'd still have to get out and tighten it. Oh, unless you counterweighted it. If you had it attached to, so if you had a pulley set up at the top and the bottom of the slide, and then you had a mount that slid on the rails that was attached to those. I'm sorry. So you have a pulley at the top and a pulley at the bottom, and a cable traveling between the two, and then you attach a mount onto the slide that would slide up and down, and then you counterweighted the other side of the string. So the mount that's on the slide would be attached to the cable, and then the other side of the cable would have a counterweight. So that's the same. That weighs the same amount. It's not.
I like it. And if I had the capacity to make it, I would be totally down.
Right.
I don't know if I have competence to build this.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of a way, because it seemed like you didn't want something that you had to tighten yourself. You just want something that you can. Move and it'll sort of hold its place wherever you move it.
No, that's true.
And it would have to be
counterweighted.
Have to bite
the bullet.
Just to have something tightened. Yeah.
Either spend 2 weeks designing CNCing and building the perfect up-down slider and then, like, left-right swivel mount
if you
to counterweight and everything, or just bite the bullet and have, like, a little self-tightening nut in there so you can move it up and just tighten it to the to the slide.
If you're going to build your own rails, though, you can just use aluminum L brackets, like those long strips of I guess they're called L brackets, but they're, you know, they use them for corners when you're doing drywall and stuff like that. And if you just get two of those and mount them so that the bottom so that it's sticking out from the wall and the bottoms are facing each other, so you've got like the bottoms of the L's facing each other. You imagine?
Okay, so it's making like a big U.
Yes, it's making like a big U. And then you take two more and you put them on the part that slides between them. Oh, you know what would work
better?
So
you're
better?
Making an O?
Yeah, basically, it's another upside down U, and that's attached to the part that slides up and down on the rails.
Okay.
And then,
but what do you have between them? Or is it just those, like that little bit of up
and
down?
Yeah, and then you would have a pulley system in there to move it up and down, because it wouldn't really stick.
Okay.
Well, would it? Actually, if you had.
So you'd have those as the edges, and then you would have, so like, ropes between those that you'd be pulling up and down with.
Yeah, or if they're counterweighted, you can just move the mount up and down, and the counterweight will rise and fall inversely to the mount.
Yeah, you just want to make sure. I think you want to make sure you have some kind of, like, you want to have it mounted to some sort of metal, because if it's just ropes, I feel like it'll swing around and sway.
Well, that's what the brackets are there for, to keep it from moving left and right. It's basically locked in place horizontally, and then it can only move vertically, and then sort of away from the wall too. But
okay.
Yeah,
but how does he move it left and right if you can't go horizontally?
Well, that's just the mount, and then onto the part that slides up and down, you would then have your what you talked about, the monitor mount that can swivel left and right.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, that seems solid.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I think that's good. That's good for today.
Cool. Oh yeah. All right. Thank you for listening to our podcast. This has been How Do I, the podcast. If you have any questions that you'd like us to answer, you can go ahead and send us an email to howdoi@instructables.com, or you can. Do we have a new email address? Is it now?
We do have another email address. You can also reach us at howdoi@rndmedialabs.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can post your questions in the comments underneath this post.
This episode, or the latest post, if you're listening to this in the future.
If you're listening in the future, then you can go to the newest blog post and post your questions there.
Yeah. Watch out behind you! There's someone there!
No!
Warnings from the past!